Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeta, Evan Basilek, Russell Young, and Sujeet DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information, should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Okay, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode 207, being recorded on the 8th of December, 2017. On the Skype call with me, I have a colleague of mine, Christos Matskas, who is going to be talking to us about serverless computing Azure, and specifically about Azure Functions. And for today, it's the first time I've been given permission to go solo, as Sujeet, Evan and Kale are all traveling various different parts of the US on customer and partner meetings and stuff. So I'm afraid you've got to put up with myself and Christos today. So we'll start kicking off, before we get onto the serverless compute stuff, we'll kick off with some of the updates that have happened in the past week or so with Azure. Christos, anything there that you like the look of in the show notes?
Yes, thanks for the intro. And one of the most exciting things for me is the fact that we're finally sunsetting the classic portal for Azure. From now on, in fact, after the January 8th of 2018, all the functionality will be available in the new portal. So no more going back and forth, and that's fantastic.
That is a big era, end of an era, isn't it? I mean, that's it's been a long time coming, but finally it's there, I guess. So no more functionality that's not in the Ibiza portal anymore, right?
Indeed, yes.
Excellent. Okay. In the week as well, I saw some changes to some VM sizes. So the B series and the M series are now GA. And just to recap on what they are, the B series is this new instance that's good for flexible CPU utilization. So I think B stands for burst, and it's good for sort of small web servers or small databases or dev test scenarios that have got spiky workloads. So I think the way it works is that the CPU usage, when it's low, you build up credit against the average, and then when your workload spikes, you can go and burst the CPU up to some more. So it's a very good low cost way of doing compute in the cloud. And the M series is kind of like the opposite scale of the spectrum. So that's our largest VMs, and they go up to, I think it's 128 virtual CPUs and nearly 4 terabytes of RAM. And those are hyper-threaded as well, so you can run some really great massive workloads in that, things like SAP HANA database and other big workloads like that. So that's quite major. That's gone GA.
Perfect for my development environment, then. I can load you.
Well, if you need 4 terabytes of RAM, I think you might be doing something wrong there, Christos.
I'm doing lots of work. That's it. No. It's great that we see this flexibility in the sizes now, because you can actually tailor the cost and the workload based on what you really need to do, rather than having to go with the least amount of choices there, which is good. But I think the other exciting thing that probably ties it to our subject today is the release of the preview for the Functions runtime, Azure Functions runtime. Which allows people to actually run functions on their on-premises environment. So this is totally outside cloud, but allows you to deploy the Functions runtime and then create your own event-driven programmatic solutions based on that runtime. So Preview 2 brings a lot of changes there, which we may cover later on. But okay. That's exciting as well, because that's moving to a very nice direction.
So it's still preview. I think I've got some questions for you later on that. But yeah, so that allows you to run on Windows 10 machines. Well, we'll come on to it later, shall we? Because I think there's some stuff about nano containers and things that I've got my questions around as well. So hopefully you can help out with that. Any others that you see in there that you want to comment on?
Let me see. Yeah, there were. In fact, there's always announcements, so it's always playing a catch-up game, isn't it? So we have the fantastic location-based services now. So geo data on the cloud. Which is fantastic, allows you to create services that require geo data like latitude and longitude, or think of TomTom functionality on the cloud. So customers can now create some very good solutions around that. And that's through a RESTful API as well. So you can use JavaScript, you can use .NET, you can use Java, anything you want to consume it.
Yeah, I think that the traffic part is partnered with TomTom, so it's coming direct from there. I was having a look at this earlier in the day. It's really quite nice, and I think we chuck in a JavaScript mapping control as well. So if you're building some software based around geospatial mapping, IoT tracking, asset tracking, logistics, that sort of thing, it does all the routing, mapping, searching, and then traffic overlay on top as well. So you should get some. You get proper full direction support in that API as well.
And the fact that it comes as a service, so geolocation data as a service, means that there's no maintenance overhead. You don't have to worry about picking all this data from 5 or 6 different suppliers, which in the past was the case when you were trying to implement something like this. So I think this is exciting for our customers.
And that's all charged as part of your subscription, isn't it, I think?
Correct, yeah. Same as other services, so that's fantastic.
That's good. Other one of note there, I think the Azure Migrate service is now in preview, in proper public preview. So this is the service that provides you some guidance and insights about how you can migrate your IaaS workloads into Azure. So it looks at assessing the readiness of a particular VM that you've got. It will right size it, so look and make sure you've got the right kind of CPU and the right SKU of Azure being picked for the workload that you've got. And that makes it cost efficient, therefore. And then it looks at some other things as well. So as well as just looking at the VMs, I think it will pull in the ability to enable site recovery for backup and DR solutions and the database migration service for SQL workloads as well. And that's all free of charge, that whole service. So it's a nice little sort of wizard-driven portal environment that you can do for helping you out with that migration. So that's becoming easier and easier.
That's fantastic.
Some other bits, Azure Advisor, so a new release of that's gone out there. So a new dashboard with some additional functionality. So this is all about advising about best practice to make sure you've got the right kind of level of security and performance and cost within your subscription. So that's pretty good. And the other one that caught my eye was this Elastic Database tool. So the Elastic DB is really quite a nice solution for doing multi-tenanted SaaS applications because it allows you to spread different customers' databases into different shards if you want to and make a fairly large solution a lot more manageable by putting them into separate databases and separate shards. And what these tools allow you to do is to query across those shards in one go. So you don't have the extra headache that you might imagine that you would have with managing all those schemas and managing cross-database queries and things like that. The tools do it for you. And I think they've been available there for some time in .NET, but we've now just launched the same tool set for Java. So there's the ability there to route data to the correct shards based on the keys and the shard map management part of it. So that's good to see.
Less and less overhead for people to create very, very scalable solutions. That's fantastic, right? We abstract most of the hard work to the tools and the platform.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I think that about wraps up the updates for now. So, Christos, if you can introduce yourself, tell us what you do.
Absolutely, yeah. So I work as a Premier Field Engineer, which probably means nothing to most of our listeners. So I work as a developer, consultant, trainer, and a solutions architect, all wrapped in one. And I'm very customer focused. So my work is usually with customers where we go in and help them solve problems or help them guide them through the process, whether they're running on Azure or on premises. So it's a very interesting role. We get to do a lot of different things. And it keeps us on our toes, obviously, because we have to know about all these updates and obviously advise customers around this stuff. And lately, I've been working very, very heavily on things like .NET Core and serverless, because serverless seems to be everywhere these days.
So, I mean, as a PFE, you get involved in quite a lot of different types of engagement, I guess, but your focus is around app development, right, and particularly around Azure.
Yeah, so my team in general, we are dev-focused, so we don't tend to cover lots of stuff on IaaS, although we can still advise on them, but because we have a large pool of resources, every one of us tends to focus on a subset of services and stuff that interest us, and then we work together as a team to help customers. So we are very dev-focused, that's correct.
Okay, that's great. And I know you do an awful lot of sort of community speaking and evangelizing on Azure as well. Have you got any engagements you've been recently doing? or looking forward to?
I think I've got like 2 talks a month these days. So I was just in Newcastle this week, again, talking about serverless and Azure Functions, which was nice. I think that was my last talk for the year. And in the next year, we have a lot of events coming up. I'm also organizing BDD Scotland. So if you're looking to submit or join us on the 10th of February, then we still have open positions and open slots for speakers. So feel free to visit that. But it's very, very busy in terms of the community. It's nice to see that the whole of the UK has actually been revitalized or reinvigorated about our technologies, and Azure is a big part of that.
Okay. So DDD, what does that stand for again?
It's developer, developer, developer.
I know.
It's been running for about 15 years. It was actually started by Phil Winstanley, which you may know personally, Russell. And it started in Reading, and it spread out. So we have DDD North, DDD South, DDD Scotland, DDD Southwest. So almost every single city now tries to run a DDD. And the good thing about that, it's free. It's for developers. It's from developers for developers. So we have developers coming and speaking. The speakers are there within their own time, and we run it on a Saturday, which makes it quite easy for everyone to attend.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. All right. Thanks. Well, tell us a bit about functions then. I mean, we did do an episode on functions. I can't remember if it was earlier this year or late last year. So, yeah, tell us a bit about, you know, where they sit in Azure now and what's happening in the world of serverless compute.
So the whole of serverless platform, it's quite big in Azure right now. So apart from functions, obviously, we have Logic Apps and we have EventGrid, which is our newest kit on the block. We also have Cosmos DB, which is our serverless NoSQL database, globally scalable. We have storage and a lot of other things. Where functions sit today is our compute solution for creating serverless stuff. So in other words, you can write a little bit of code that runs somewhere. We totally abstract the infrastructure for you, so you don't have to care about whether it's running on Linux or Windows. You choose the language, you choose the solution you want to implement, and we give you a lot of functionality out of the box. And it sits between the sweet spot of PaaS and SaaS. So you don't have a platform to manage. You still write a little bit of code, so you manage that, but you don't have the infrastructure. And it's not SaaS, so it's not totally managed by somebody else. You still have a little bit of control, just enough to define the settings and the environment that you want to run. But the biggest asset there, or the biggest benefit, is the fact that you have an abstraction on the underlying infrastructure, which makes a lot of decision-making process totally mute when you're looking into implementing a solution.
Okay, so Microsoft are looking after the resilience and the availability of it as well?
They look after the scalability, and depending on which mode you run on, we have two modes on Azure today. One is the consumption model, which in effect is ideal for things like spiky workloads on unpredictable workloads, and where at 1 minute you might be receiving 2 requests per second, but on the next hour you could be getting 10,000 requests. So you want something that scales very efficiently and very quickly. That's your consumption model. And then you have things that are more predictable, like something that you want to run on a schedule, maybe twice a day or once a day. And you don't want to sit there waiting for things to happen. So you can use the app service plan, which many customers may already be using for web apps. And they can leverage that because it's a prepaid solution. You've already allocated the resources for that. You can dump as many functions as you want and run stuff there. And depending on what you want to do, you want to choose the right environment. So there are other things like timeouts and maximum memory that you get. So depending on what you're running, you need to choose the right model.
Okay. So what's kind of like a common use case scenario that we see functions being used for?
Actually, there's nothing common in using functions. I imagine to be the Swiss Army knife of Azure, because you can solve a lot of different problems. Some of the commonalities there is, again, we said about scheduled tasks. So you might want to run something like run a report at midnight to send emails to the customer. So that's a nice solution for functions. Another one is creating bots, and you want something to interact with your backend. So that goes through functions and Logic Apps. Another one could be fetching files from one location and put them to another location. And finally, you can create some very scalable APIs. So imagine you want to create a nice website today using some single page framework like Angular or React. You could create those files and stick them into storage and use Azure Functions as your backend routing and API. And in effect, you can run a very scalable web app at £5 a month. which is insane when you think about
it. Yeah, okay. And in terms of language support, and obviously we can do .NET and C# in there. Are there other languages coming as well?
We're at the crossroad right now because as we speak, we're in a very strange situation where we have two runtimes. We have the V1 runtime, and this is what actually spins up your function when you call it. And this is the old version, which had a reliance or a dependency on the full .NET framework, hence Windows only. And it could run most of the languages that you see today. So when you go at the portal today, when you run the GA version of functions, you have support for a lot of languages. So you have .NET, the old .NET. You have support for JavaScript, obviously, so that runs top of Node. Then you have other languages like Java, which is very exciting now because we're the only ones supporting Java. We have Python support. We have PowerShell support, Bash or Bats, and also PHP, and even we support things like, I forgot the last one, TypeScript. Yes, TypeScript. So you can use TypeScript on top of your JavaScript to make it a bit more type-focused. So a lot of things, but the V2 stuff, which is a new rewrite of the function runtime, It's cross-platform now. It's built on top of .NET Core and allows you to run anywhere that you want, but it has less language support because we need to onboard these languages. So right now, V2 only supports .NET Core with the .NET standard libraries and JavaScript.
Okay. So, So I still need to pick the V1 if I'm using any of those other nice things that you, those other nice languages that we talked about. Okay.
We advise customers when they run production workloads to use V1, only because the preview bits can actually change any time because we're at preview stage and we want to make sure that we get the best out of it. So we allow you to try things even on Azure, so you can choose the beta version.
Yeah.
However, it's advisable not to run production workloads in case we break something and then you're in trouble.
Right. Okay. Okay, and as far as the runtime goes, I mean, you talked about that before and running on Windows 10. Is that, I've read somewhere it was running on sort of nano containers. Is that?
That is correct. We did a lot of changes there. So one of the problems that we had with the previous version was that, and I think we still have the dependency on a SQL Server. So for the runtime, although it is a little bit confusing. So we have the functions runtime, which is the runtime that spins up your functions when you run on Azure. And then we have the Azure functions runtime, which is the one you install on your on-premises environment. And unfortunately, we name them the same, so it's so confusing. If we are talking about the Azure functions runtime that we run on premises, We now have added support for V2, so you can run both V1 and V2 functions, which is the stuff that we're discussing earlier on. We also added support for Windows Nano containers, which is incredibly streamlined and lightweight. We also added support for more languages like PowerShell and F#. Oh, we forgot F#. The F# guys will be a little bit upset with that. F# is it's now a first-class citizen on Azure. So, yeah, we do that. There's an updated portal experience, which makes things much nicer. And there's also an updated experience on the Azure portal as well. And supports multi-tenancy and multiple users to use the same infrastructure. So a lot of things are coming there. DNS support for the runtime and the portal. So technically, you get your own version of functions running on your on-premise environment, which is insanely clever. And one of the things that we did announce last week or 2 weeks ago now, time flies, but at Connect, the online conference that we had at Microsoft, we did announce support for containers now on Azure Functions. And that's something that a lot of developers wanted. It was high up in the wish list, and now we made a reality.
How does that work, though? Does that mean that you invoke a function that's running inside a container? Is that
so? When you, the actual image that we have comes with a runtime.
Yeah.
And what you do is you inject your code in there or your functions, and when you spin up the container, it's already listening for events. So whether you're binding to storage or whether you're binding to an HTTP endpoint, you can call them. Although if you're running on Azure, we give you two options to run your containerized functions. One is you bring your own container with everything wrapped up and we deploy that and run it. Or you can use one of our containers, you just deploy your code. So in terms of the experience, the second option seems very similar to what you do today.
Yeah.
The first option is you manage the whole thing, which means that you can actually take your functions and run them on top of Kubernetes or Azure Nano Server or Service Fabric or ACI, anything you choose, which makes it very flexible.
Wow. Okay. And when people are running, using the runtime to use functions on premises, is that Is that generally for a kind of a dev test type scenario, or is it a real hybrid production use case that you could that you'd want to use it for?
I think that most of the customers that choose to go down that route are the ones that cannot run on Azure right now, or they have security requirements that don't allow them to run their functions on the portal. So usually banks are quite keen in trying it and using it because they can bring the whole reactive or event-driven development onto their own premises. And if you think about the extensibility framework that we added on functions now, that means that you can create your own custom connectors within your own premise environment. So think something like, I don't know, ServiceNow connector that spins up and throws an event every time something happens, and you can process that event with your functions. So this is something that we don't provide you out of the box today on Azure Functions, although you can use Logic Apps to do the same thing. So lots of different ways to skin the same cat. However, this is the customers that we tend to speak about the Azure Functions runtime. We want to run on premises. We love functions and what they can offer us, but you know, we have that kind of security issue that we don't want to be on the portal on the Azure environment.
Right. Or I guess they've got a low latency requirement where the function needs to access some data that they don't want to put in Azure as well.
And that as well. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned Event Grid earlier, and Functions binds to Event Grid. Event Grid's fairly new to Azure. It's been, 2 months or something, I think. So we've got this whole now ability to just plug stuff together really easily, and you can plug like messages that you're receiving from IoT IoT Hub, for example, into Event Grid, and then use functions to trigger off of that. Are you seeing that kind of uptake happen a lot more?
Absolutely, yeah. I see them as a connecting tissue between anything that you don't really manage yourself and the backend that you manage. So Event Grid is your central focal point that can process events from anywhere. That can be Azure, that can be some other environment, that can be your mobile apps. So any custom events or built-in events that Azure Event Grid can manage at the moment can be fed into multiple subscribers. It doesn't have to be just functions or Logic Apps, although we do provide amazing experience there with a predefined bindings and connectors. However, anything can subscribe to it. You can have webhooks, you can have your custom apps listening to that, and it scales insanely because you don't need to manage resources because Event Grid is managed by us. And all you care about is your topics, which are more or less your publishers, and your subscribers, which can, again, scale to an infinite amount.
Right. Okay. That sounds pretty powerful. So I think these kinds of event-based solutions are going to become a lot more prevalent, aren't they? And as far as functions goes, the thing that always sort of worries me a little bit about it is it seems really simple on the face of it. You just got to write a little piece of code in there. But how useful can that little piece of code become if, you know, you've got dependencies on other bits of business logic, or you've got dependencies on bits and pieces? What's the kind of guidance around how you break down that, or how you include dependencies in your function to make it sort of useful?
So obviously you can reuse existing codes, libraries that you already have, and every language that we have out there now supports package management. So with Node, you can upload npm packages and deploy them as part of your function. For your business logic with .NET, you can also upload those and consume them. We already provide you with a number of namespaces already available. So the storage SDKs and the Azure SDKs are available out of the box for your Azure functions. However, I totally understand that because it's always easy to start with one function and do a proof of concept and add two or three, then suddenly you end up with 50 functions you need to manage the architecture and the workflow. So there are documents out there that advise you around your architecture and how to create complex workflows that scale as you develop stuff. And there's a very nice guide about best practices as well with Azure Functions, and also a guide on how to choose the best model for you, whether that's consumption or app service plan or containers now, because we added containers as well. So you get to choose your pick. But things like fan out, fan in, singletons that can run for you. And in fact, one thing we didn't mention already is the durable functions that we have, which allow you to manage states and create very complex workflows without you having to do all the plumbing and the infrastructure, like storage queues and storage spaces and all of these things.
So tell me a little bit about that. How does that work?
So durable functions, one thing that we preach about Azure Functions is the fact that they, by nature, are stateless, so there's no state there. However, all those functions are stateless. The solutions and the applications you tend to develop tend to have states, whether that's a web app or whether that's an API or whether that's something that you have to run continuously or for a long time. Imagine having to copy files from one location to another and you want to know what the progress is and how many megabytes or gigabytes you've copied already. To do that with the functions out of the box today, it would have been quite hard because you have to pass messages back and forth with the functions, whereas durable functions allow you to orchestrate these and they become the orchestrator. And what you do is you you define which functions you want to call either in a loop or on a per needed basis, and it manages the state. So it has a state session or, you know, context that can be passed around. So functions don't need to go and interrogate other things. And it allows you to do some very clever stuff like fan out to process 10,000 items at the same time and then fan in. So you get the result of that and you return it to the consumer without you having to worry about what happens on the in and out. At the moment, it's only .NET, C#, but we are adding support for other languages as well to allow you to create durable functions with JavaScript and F# and so on.
Right, okay. Okay, and the other thing that comes up quite a bit is functions proxy. So the ability to kind of create a new API facade. How does that work, and what's the guidance around using that versus using, say, API apps or something like that? Why would I choose to use function proxies?
So the first thing I like to say about the function proxy is the fact that you can have a proxy that becomes your API management endpoint. And this is a little bit of a competition between the two products, but they're, in fact, they're quite different in what they offer. So proxies are a very lightweight way to process incoming requests, maybe do a little bit of URL rewrite, and then pass the message back to the backend API. Whether that's a function or some other API that you have on premises becomes totally transparent to the consumer because everything goes through a proxy. So you have a unified endpoint that gets called when you need to process something. So let's say one of the endpoints can be a customer, the other one can be orders. Your customer's API, the actual implementation, can be an Azure function, but your orders may be something that you wrote 2 years ago and sits on a web API on your on-premise environment. What we do is we actually proxy everything through that same endpoint, and the customers are none the wiser about that. But you can also create some clever things, like you can do HTTP injection of headers and body. So you can actually create quickly some API stubs that return some JSON, so you can allow your development teams to work on that piece of work without you really having a concrete implementation of that API. And you can be very efficient, very quick. You can also use OpenAPI or Swagger, as most people tend to know that. So we have that built in and allows you to, again, consume that API without you having to know how that's been implemented.
Okay. So you've got the ability to mock responses in there as well. So, yeah, people that are used to doing dependency injection would find that quite nice. Okay. So you can develop your API from lots of other existing APIs that could be all over the place, or you can write them in place in functions as well. So what's the future for functions as far as you understand it?
The future for functions is bright and the sky is the limit. We are focusing on actually improving the performance and the stability of the platform. We want to make it as performant as possible. There are a lot of engineering challenges as we add more languages. So the focus over the next few months will be to onboard as many languages as we can on the V2 cross-platform runtime for functions. And there are quite a few exciting things. So keep on looking at this space. Container support will be even better now. So lots of exciting stuff over the next few months. So there'll be lots of announcements coming through.
Fantastic. Okay, well, thanks. That's a really comprehensive overview. There was one last question for you around sort of DevOps and continuous deployment and continuous integration of functions. What's the experience like there compared to deploying and building a web app or something like that? Is it just as good, or is it harder, easier? How does it work?
I think the overall experience is very impressive. Once you get into the flow of creating a single API endpoint and deploying that, or creating a single event-driven process and deploying that, and then moving on to the next and the next without you having to set up the whole framework from scratch, whether that's .NET Core or a Node.js API,
Think of that as a very scalable piecemeal approach on creating very complex and very performant solutions without you having to worry upfront about the architectural decisions. You can write one function in Node because that's the language that you choose, but the next one could be Python because it has a very excellent library to do some kind of processing. And the other one can be Node.js or .NET Core. Again, it makes it very transparent and you can mix and match what you need. In terms of the CI/CD, we always recommend that you follow best practices. So we have full integration with VSTS and Azure. The CLI tools also allow you to push. We have also the ability to deploy through GitHub or Bitbucket or Subversion if you choose to use those tools. So there's a variety of tools, but ideally you don't want to be right-click publish because friends don't allow friends to do that.
Okay. So you can go and publish individual functions independently of each other and you can get a really nice CD pipeline going via that.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. Thanks. I don't have any other questions for you, so thanks. It was really comprehensive coverage of Azure Functions Event Grid. So thank you very much for your time and wish you all the best with DDD. Hope that goes well. And I'll ask you for some show notes and stuff so that we can add on some links to functions and your events as well. And we'll add those to the notes associated with the link.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for your time, Christos. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.